Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And podcasts of prior shows are also available there under the Public Affairs tab. Today is March 10th, 2021. The markets were mixed today, with the Dow closing up at 32,297. The NASDAQ barely down at 13,068, and the S&P up at 3,898. Our topic tonight is listeners' tax questions. So listen up, listeners. If you have tax questions tonight, the show is yours. The phone number is 610-758-8810. I will repeat that often because that is what we are hoping for. Calls tonight. We are live. We'll take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. And again, the number is 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori. That is one of the reasons she's here. She'll write down the question and she'll bring it into the studio to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, listeners, tax season. It is tax season, and generally this time of year, I do try to focus some of the topics around taxes. So I love questions. It's my favorite part of the show. If there's something that you've been wondering about, we certainly could cover it. And I did survey my fellow colleagues at work to say, what kind of tax questions are you hearing? And they gave me a bunch of questions. So maybe you might have one of these questions, and maybe I'll cover it. But I'm sure there are a lot of questions that, you know, other listeners may have and would benefit from a brave soul who wants to call in and ask. To me, it's very interesting, and it's tough to kind of understand all of this, even for people who do it professionally. It is a lot to keep up with, let me tell you, a lot to keep up with, and there is a lot more planning around a tax return than most people realize. A lot of opportunities for you, especially when we've been trying to navigate these economic income payments or economic stimulus payments, recovery rebate credits, whatever you might know it as or call it. There could be some planning around these for you. But we have other questions that come up as well. So let me give the phone number one more time, and then I'll start with some of the questions that we've seen come in to the office. So the phone number, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give the question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it in to me. One of the questions that has come up a couple times for one of our advisors were clients called and said, you know, they had been waiting for their 1099-R from their IRA, and that was like the last piece of information they needed for their tax preparation. Well, you all know that the last year has been a bit of a blur, and last year at this time, we were all working remotely. We were doing tax preparation remotely, and that was tax returns for 2019. Then 2020 became a blur. We had something called the CARES Act, which threw out some, you know, economic stimulus and provisions that people could benefit from. And one of those was a waiver of having to take a required minimum distribution. If you were over age 70 and a half or 72, depending on when you were born, and or a beneficiary of an IRA, there was a little bit of wiggle room for you too as a beneficiary of an IRA who also has required minimum distributions. There were some things that they allowed, depending on the timing and all of that, where they said you don't have to take your required minimum distribution. So some people who didn't even hadn't taken it yet at that time, just said to their advisor, I don't need it, don't send it to me. Some people took the required minimum distribution, and then when the IRS said, hey, under the CARES Act, you don't have to take it, you can put it back, and they gave certain people until August 15th to put it back, you know, some of that was happening as well. And some people took their required minimum distribution because they need it for cash flow, and you know, took it just like usual. So right there, we have three different circumstances that could apply. One, someone might have just taken their regular required minimum distribution. And in that case, you should have received a 1099-R. And those are usually one of the first ones that come out. If you're one of those people and are missing it, maybe you have online access to your accounts. They may not issue it via paper, and you'd have to go online to download it. We talked about that last week or the week before. So if you know you got the required minimum distribution and you know you took it, you should have a 1099-R. Should have been sent out January 31st. Those went out very timely, I believe. Some of you took it and returned it or returned part of it. You also would have received a 1099-R, and that 1099-R will show the distribution, and it will show it as all taxable because the custodians have to issue the 1099-R anytime you do a distribution. Even if you pay it back, it was paid back later, so it was considered a rollover. So they have to report it as a distribution. So you're going to see a 1099-R showing that distribution. The gross amount and the taxable amount might be the same. And in this story, let's pretend it was $20,000 and you had $5,000 of taxes withheld and the taxable amount would be $20,000. Now, you worked with your advisor, you had plenty of cash in the bank, you decided to put back the whole $20,000, even though you only netted $15,000 of that. So $20,000 less the $5,000 withholdings, you net $15,000. That would still be $20,000 taxable, but you paid it back. In that scenario, you're going to have that 1099-R, 20 and 20, and you're going to have to tell the software or your preparer or your pencil that that $20,000 was rolled over, and you have to tell the IRS that it was zero taxable, even though it shows $20,000 taxable. All right? The $5,000 went to the IRS already. You paid back the full 20. The IRS has five over in their coffers. And when you file your tax return, now that you're not reflecting the $20,000 of income, you're probably going to have a bigger refund than you ordinarily would have. And you'll get it back that way, or it'll offset the other taxes that you owe. So you want to be careful of that kind of situation. Now, the people who are asking for the 1099-Rs and didn't get them, they're probably the people who didn't take their distribution, forgot what year it was. I mean, plain and simple, it's very hard to keep track of what year we're in from my perspective. And you might not have taken your required minimum distribution in 2020. Therefore, you're not going to have a 1099-R. All right. So 1099-R for regular distribution, someone might have taken. 1099-R for someone who took a distribution but paid it back, you're going to have to adjust and you know, overwrite that taxable portion. So be very careful on that and still have the withholdings. And some people might have done a partial. So if you took the $20,000 out, had $5,000 of taxes taken out, you netted $15,000, maybe you only paid back $15,000, then you'd have to let the IRS know the taxable portion is only the $5,000. So think about what you're doing there. All right, folks, we are coming up on our first break. And if you have questions, the topic this evening is listeners' text questions. And you can give us a call at 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable. You can give your question to Lori C. 610-758-8810. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are taking listeners' tax questions this evening. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air or give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in to me. Another question that has come up, something that I continue to talk about regularly, amongst my fellow peers and colleagues, a question about tax deadlines being extended. Now, you know, the IRS has been battered with requests by the AICPA, the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, the AARP, members of Congress, been battered with pleas to extend tax season, under the premise that how different is our situation this year from last year? We are still in a pandemic. We still have much of the nation not vaccinated. We still have business closures. People are still working remotely. We still cannot have face-to-face meetings, or we're encouraged to limit that. So, and we have, you know, economic hardship for many, many people. So there have been questions and pleas to extend tax season to give people a little bit more time to gather their documents, put them together, pay their taxes, and all of that. And where you're hoping, and I'm hoping, that there will be an extension, and I'll tell you more about that in a minute because I have a caller on line one, and that is what we're doing tonight. Don from Whitehall Township, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Hi. How can I help you this evening?
A sister of mine passed away last year, about a year ago. One of the things she left for me was an insurance policy.
Mm-hmm.
Total up to be
$19,100. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had to pay taxes to the county. One was $924, and the other tax to the same county was $4,163. And the tax to the federal, which I have to do this month, will be a little over $2,400, which totals up to be a little over 39%. Is that the norm, 39%?
No. First of all, is it actually life insurance, Don, or was it really an annuity?
Well, it was a death benefit insurance.
Because if it's life insurance is not income taxable. Life insurance is not. Is she a Pennsylvania resident?
Was she what?
Because was she a Pennsylvania resident?
Yeah, she was.
Because you said county tax. So there's a Pennsylvania inheritance tax that might apply to certain assets, but it does not apply to life insurance. So if it was a retirement account, there would be inheritance on that. If it was an annuity, there would be inheritance on that. And both of
I think it's an insurance annuity.
Okay. So what happens with the annuity, the death value of the annuity would be subject to inheritance tax. And because depending on the relationship, if it's a friend, it's 15%. If it's a sibling, it's 12%. And, you know, a lineal a relative would be 4.5, spouse is 0. So there would be a little slice of tax on that. And then if it's an annuity for income tax, let's say you got $19,000. Usually someone has invested in that if it's a non-qualified annuity, and maybe this person put in $10,000, then usually not the whole thing is income taxable. Only part of it would be income taxable, the earnings on it and the growth. If it's an IRA, it would be income taxable on the whole thing.
No, it's not
an
IRA,
Not an IRA. Well, if it was $19,000, did you get a 1099-R from the custodian saying what was income taxable, what part was income taxable?
I did get the 1099 from the insurance company, yes.
Okay, and was the whole $19,000 income taxable? Because generally, not all of it would be. You want to look at that and see there's a gross distribution and then a taxable distribution.
Well, anyhow, I don't know why I had to pay the county two different taxes of $924 and $4,163 from that money.
Yeah. Let me just see if I can quickly do a little calculator of $4,163 on $19,100. That's 22%. That does not sound right, Don. That does not sound right. So I think you need to get some more information or have somebody look at that, because that does not sound right for the, unless, Don, for the county, like Lehigh County or Monroe County or
Northampton.
Northampton County.
Yes.
Something just doesn't sound quite right about that. That sounds high on $19,100. I could see if it was to the Register of Wills, and depending on the...
Did you go to the Register of Wills?
Okay, depending on the relationship. Maybe there was other assets that you were reporting as well, but $4,163 sounds high on $19,100. But if there were more assets, then I could see where you might have additional tax, if there were some other assets besides this annuity.
There was, but this was strictly towards the $19,100 from the insurance company.
Yeah. Maybe you could try to contact me through the, if you have email, you could try to send me some more information through yourfinancialchoices.com, and I could try to see if I could, look and see what you got, or we could touch base offline on this, and maybe I could help you work through this a little bit, get more information, because something doesn't sound right.
Okay. All right, thank you for your help.
All right. Good luck, Don. Take care. Interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. The numbers sound a little high to me for the county. I think there might be some other things going on there. So I hope Don reaches out so I can see if I can help him kind of get to the bottom of that. I hate for people to, overpay on something because they didn't have enough information or didn't understand something. So yourfinancialchoices.com is a way to send a question or more information. So let me go back to some of these other, and I love the questions. So any question, you're welcome to give me a call. Again, that number is 610-758-8810. So let me highlight here questions about the tax deadline and why I have thought for some time that it was going to be extended. I had read an article that said if the stimulus bill passed, this the third one, if it passed, the IRS would have to divert resources. I don't know where I read this because I can't find the article again, but they would have to divert resources to help process the additional stimulus payment. Not to mention, in this stimulus bill, they are carving out, I believe, $10,200 of unemployment benefits as not taxable. So what does that tell you? That is a software change, folks. That is a huge software change that we would have to change the taxation of the unemployment when we're filing the tax returns. And unless they're going to figure out some other way to to do that. It could change everything on a tax return. I mean, it could change someone's Social Security. It could change someone's stimulus payment. It could change a lot of different things. So I think they have to do the software change. And I just personally think they're going to have to extend it. And I'll read more about that and the reasons why they want this extension and the implications of it when we come back from this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, and podcasts of prior shows are also available at WDIY.org, and those are available to anyone, anywhere, worldwide. So if you think it's a program or a topic that we've covered that might be of interest to your family and friends who are outside of our listening area, they can go to WDIY.org under Public Affairs and look for some programs. We are taking listeners' tax questions this evening. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Let me finish up my question on the tax deadline. So this was a press release from March 8th, Washington, D.C. Today, the House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Richard E. Neal from Massachusetts and Oversight Subcommittee Chairman Bill Pascrell from New Jersey called on the Internal Revenue Service to extend the 2021 tax filing season as the pandemic continues to impose titanic strain on the agency and on taxpayers as of the end of February. Listen to this, folks. The number of returns filed was down by nearly 25% from the last year at the same time when it wasn't a pandemic, and the number of returns processed by the IRS was down by 31%. Further, only 27% of telephone calls to the IRS are being answered, indicating that approximately 3 out of every 4 taxpayers trying to reach the IRS are unable to get help. And Chairman Neal and Pascrell go on to say, we stand in the midst of the most important tax filing season in recent memory, and taxpayers cannot get the help they need from the IRS. Returns received by the IRS have fallen significantly behind last year's numbers. On top of all that, once it is signed into law, the American Rescue Plan will change the tax laws applicable to unemployment benefits received in 2020 and reported on returns filed during this filing season. Taxpayers need more time to file accurate returns and get their questions answered by the IRS. The chairman continued, last year, the tax filing season was extended by 3 months to July 15, 2020. We want to remind the IRS that many Americans continue to face the same health and economic challenges that necessitated an extension last year, facing enormous strain and anxiety. Taxpayers need flexibility now. We demand that the IRS announce an extension as soon as possible. Well, still haven't heard. I Google it several times a day. I don't know what's going on. I don't see how we're going to be able to get any of this done by April 15th. Information is coming in much later this tax season and much slower, and it's harder to kind of arrange drop-offs where it's contactless and we have fewer people kind of in the office, and that's everywhere. So hopefully there will be an extension. And the next question then would be, if there is an extension of time to file, is there also an extension of time to pay? And I would expect that, of course, that would coincide because that's what they did last year for the same reasons that these chairmen had just outlined, that it gives people a little bit more time, too. If the stimulus payments are coming through and people owe taxes, they might have the money to pay the taxes. If they change the unemployment, it'll give people time to, you know, correct that amount on their tax return, which might help relieve the additional tax burden for the unemployment compensation to some extent. So we're hoping for some news on that sooner. Here's another question. I have a new job and make less than my 2018-2019 return used for the stimulus checks in December or January. How do I recoup the stimulus funds with my new income? All right, so this is a good point. Now, if you recall, again, we've been in a time warp, and the first stimulus payments they generated last July were based on either your 2018 return or your 2019 return, whichever one had been filed. For people who had lower income in 2018 and high income in 2019, it made sense to not file the 2019 return because they would qualify for the stimulus payment based on 2018. For people whose income was too high in 2018, lower in 2019, it made sense to accelerate the filing of the 2019 return, get that filed, lower income, they'd qualify for the stimulus. But the stimulus is really based on 2020 income. So we get a third bite of the apple. And for 2020, what they tell us, we enter what stimulus payment folks got for the first round and then the second round. The second round that was done in December, some people didn't get till January of 2021. This is still a 2020 reporting item. If in 2020 your income is lower than it was in 2018 and 2019, you will now get to qualify for that stimulus payment. In fact, I had clients who did not qualify under the 2019 rules, and with some good tax planning, we could lower the income in 2020 by not taking the RMD, by increasing 401k contributions, by doing IRA contributions, lowering the income to qualify for some or all of the stimulus payment. It depends on the income. The first and second stimulus payments have a different phase out than this upcoming stimulus. So for married filing joint, it's between $150,000 and $200,000. There's a phase out. If your income was under $150,000 for the first and second stimulus, you could, whether it was 18, 19, 20, you could qualify for the whole thing. If you're between 150 and 200, you could qualify for some of it. If you're over 200, you don't get any of it. And I think if my memory's right, for single people, it was 75,000 in kind of the same way, 75 to 100. The third stimulus payment, I haven't seen the bill. I'm not exactly sure what's getting signed, but if what I had heard prior was true, the phase out for married filing joint is 150 to 160. So some people who file their 2020 return thinking, oh, good, we can go ahead and get this filed. We qualified. We're good. Maybe, you know, getting part of the stimulus, maybe their income is 168,000. They would get some of the stimulus. Well, you're not going to get the third stimulus because I said the phase out is 150 to 160. And basically, I have a lot of folks who are telling me, you know, I don't need it. I don't need it. They're, you know, different families have different circumstances. You could have a young couple who are making $160,000 together and they might not need it. But another family could be making $160,000 and have five kids and, you know, a big mortgage payment and had just bought in their dream home, that kind of thing. So, you know, every person's situation is different. But if you are using software, there will be input in that software for you to say how much of the stimulus payment you already received. If you received zero and you're within the limitations, then That gets reported on page 2 of the tax return. There's a special line. I don't remember the number of the line, but it actually says recovery rebate credit. And there is a worksheet that you complete to calculate that dollar amount. There's a worksheet for the recovery rebate to calculate what it is. So some people who may not qualify based on 2020 but did qualify based on 2019 may wait to file their 2020 return. It all just depends on when, you know, what your income is, what your situation is, and, you know, whether you need it or not. What I've told people who've told me they don't need it when they qualify for it, I say donate it. I mean, there are a lot of nonprofits who could use some help, and WDIY is one of those nonprofits. And if you don't need it, you're welcome to, make a donation here. Folks, we are at the halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. The topic tonight is listeners' tax questions. So if you have something, love to hear it. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening. Welcome to Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm James Johnson. It's 6:30. We have 60 degrees and fair skies. Lehigh Valley weather. Tonight, mostly clear with a low of 41. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high of 69. Clouds with a chance of showers Thursday night and a low of 52. Friday, we'll have a 20% chance of showers and a high of 65. And partly cloudy Friday night with a low of 32. WDIY, your award-winning Lehigh Valley Public Radio station for over 25 years. Many choices, real voices, and now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, James. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can leave your question or give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and she will bring it in. More questions from my colleagues at work, of kinds of questions they're getting. How do I deliver my tax documents to the office? Well, most accounting firms will have the ability, hopefully, to receive electronic documents, or, you know, they will allow you to hopefully make arrangements for drop off or pickup or mail. More and more clients that ordinarily would like to deliver the documents to the office because they're nervous about putting their tax documents in the mail have always traditionally come to the office. But with all of the COVID restrictions and protocols that everyone is following, and they themselves may be being nervous about that exposure when it's not needed, have taken to mailing more, and we are probably mailing out more tax returns. Certainly have seen a huge flood of more clients willing to do electronic documents. To do that, though, you need a computer and you need a scanner, and you have to know how to scan those documents then into a folder on your computer and then upload them into the electronic portal, but that certainly does work. So hopefully you have options. You can mail your documents in, you can drop them off with pre-scheduling, or you can do electronic delivery of the documents. It works quite well, frankly, and it's amazing if the little kids have had to learn to adapt to virtual school and doing all of what they have to do on computers. I guess the rest of us need to as well. We had a call from Anne in Bethlehem. She said, if the stimulus went out, what paper proof do we get? A 1099 or what? Anne, that's a great question. And you may not have any proof. You know, some people received letters in the mail, and some people kept those letters. Some people received debit cards and promptly threw them away because they thought it was junk. Some people received direct deposit, and maybe a letter came out. That was on the first stimulus payment. On the second stimulus payment, I don't believe anything was mailed out. So you may not have received any proof of anything. But generally, if you're working with a preparer, I have been able to put it to the penny what the stimulus payment should have been for you to receive. I had a client who didn't think they got it or couldn't remember and didn't know how much it was. I calculated it and said, I think it's going to be, you know, $1,072. And sure enough, boom, they saw it in their bank. And then they knew that they had received that amount. So you don't get a 1099. You don't get a tax document. Maybe you got a letter, maybe not. And so you just kind of have to know what it is. But if you don't know what it is or don't remember what it is, and you look at your prior year tax return, you should be able to see it. Is there a website? I think the IRS for some time did have a way for you to go and check to see, I think, if it was on the way. I haven't personally seen that myself, but I don't know if they did it for the subsequent payments. So that could be something for you to do, is to Google that. I would have to check on that. If you go to the IRS.gov website, I know when the stimulus payments were first being issued, people could go on there and check to see how much they were getting and how it was coming and, you know, was it delivered. I would think if they did it for the first time, they might have done it for the second time. So that could be a way to check too, Anne. So I know you may think that your tax preparer needs proof, but your tax preparer really just needs to know the amount, okay? The amount, so they know how much to enter into the software to calculate whether you have any remaining recovery rebate credit. And frankly, if you got the full stimulus and you know you got the full stimulus, you just say, I got the full thing, don't worry about it, because then we don't have to do anything. It's only if you didn't get it or you only got a partial that we actually have to calculate anything. So that was a good question and led to, I think, probably, you know, an important comment on that, that if you got the full thing, we don't have anything to do. If you got a partial or didn't get it at all, then we have to be mindful of that and calculate it. All right. So thank you for that question, Anne. I appreciate it. We have another caller. We have Dave on line one. Hi, Dave. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you real
good.
Well.
Good, good. How can I help you?
The question relates to a partial conversion that I did from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA.
Yep.
And some of the contributions in there were non-deductible contributions, so I had a basis in there. There was about a third of the IRA. But in calculating the taxable portion, I believe I would need to add the value of the value of another IRA that I have, a traditional IRA, which is all pre-tax. I have not done any conversions with. That one's in a different institution. So that's what I'm trying to
Correct. And that is a great question. That's why I love doing this show, and I love listeners who ask great questions, because this is very, very important. So what happens is when you convert from an IRA to a Roth, if you don't have any basis in your IRA, meaning you always did pre-tax dollars, always got a deduction, you know, maybe did it through a 401k at work and you eventually rolled it over to an IRA, if it was all pre-tax, a conversion's easy, because then if you convert $20,000, $20,000's taxable. But in your story, you might have two IRAs. One might have been the rollover from prior 401ks, all pre-tax dollars.
Exactly.
And then you have another IRA that over the years you might have done non-deductible contributions or something like that. For whatever reason, you have basis in the other IRA. Sometimes in the years and years ago when people rolled over 401ks that had after-tax basis in them, if they rolled the whole 401k over to the IRA, it had basis then. Nowadays, we know to roll that part to a Roth. But back in the day, we didn't have Roths. We didn't know about that. And we'd roll the whole amount over to an IRA, you might have had some after-tax basis. So now you have two different IRAs, one with no basis, the other one with a bit of basis. The IRS looks at our IRAs as one. It doesn't matter how many accounts we have. It doesn't matter if we have basis in one and pre-tax in the other. The IRS looks at it all as one. You have to put the total value of your account. And it's the 1230, if I'm remembering right, it's the form 8606. You have to put the 1231-19 value of the IRAs because for 2020, it's going to say, did you take something out during the year? And it backs into the non-taxable portion of your conversion. So in our story, if you had a third of the one IRA had basis and the other one didn't have any, you know, when you add them up together and you converted, let's pretend $20,000, you know, maybe only $1,000 might be not taxable. It all depends on how big your IRAs are. So the software will calculate that for you if you've entered everything in correctly, and you can watch the flow of it down the 8606 to see if it makes sense to you.
Okay. And that, as you described, that's exactly what happened. The other IRA was one that I had rolled over both pre-tax and after-tax. Of course, the after-tax went to a Roth, and the pre-tax went into this traditional. But mm-hmm. as I was preparing the return, I haven't filed it yet, but it just dawned on me that, I think I need to include that other one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Such a bummer.
Because
it would be so nice to get the big chunk not taxable. But I think about those people that were rolling over those after-tax piece. I mean, if we were as smart back then as we are today, we'd know better.
Okay.
Well, Dave, I hope it helps, and good luck.
Oh, very much. And just one more thing, Lori, just to confirm, you said it would be based on the value as of the end of 2019 versus 2020.
Yeah, I'm trying to, because you know what? I got to tell you, every year, you know, I have preparers now who do the returns. I review them, and I'm trying to remember the input screen, and it's not what you'd think. So just either look at the instructions, or if you're using software, it'll probably tell you which value to use. But in my mind, I always thought, gosh, we should use 1231, 2020 mm-hmm. in my example. And I think it's actually 1231 2019. But double check on that.
Okay.
It's one way or another. They back into it the right way. But you might either have to look up the instructions or follow what the software asks for. But it'll be beneficial to you to have your statement. Your 1231-2020 statement should have your 1-1-2020 balance, which is the same as your 1231-2019.
Okay.
All right? So just have the numbers ready for you. Otherwise, it's frustrating.
Okay, yeah, I will confirm that.
Okay, good
right,
luck.
Well,
thank you for calling.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That is a great point. And I love that people are talking about that. And let me tag on to that then now. So this is something for people who maybe have not retired yet, who are still working, but thinking of retiring soon. You could have a number of things in your IRA, in your 401ks at work. You could have after-tax basis in your 401k. You could have a designated Roth portion of your 401k. Or you may work at a company that has employer stock. All of those should keep you from rolling over until you think it through, because there are just certain things that you want to make sure you do. At the end of every show, I say be proactive, not reactive. The proactive part is understand what's in your 401k and talking with someone and saying, what does it mean if I have a Roth piece? What does it mean if I have an after-tax piece? What does it mean if I have employer stock in my 401k? They all have special tax treatment. The after-tax money, for a while, there was a time when it wasn't clear what you could do with the after-tax money in a 401k. And we would just maybe have it go, instead of rolling it into the IRA and having basis like Dave did, you could take out the after-tax amount and just give it to the client, and then they would only roll over the pre-tax amount. That was one thing that happened. Then Roths came into vogue. And then the IRS clarified along the way, I don't remember in which act, they clarified that you could actually roll over the after-tax amount into a Roth. Why would that be a better idea than taking the after-tax in a check? You could take the after-tax in a check, especially if you need cash flow. That could work. But why would we rather roll the after-tax into a Roth? That's because if we roll it over into the Roth, it could continue to grow income tax-free. It's very hard to get Roth money. We work very hard to help people get big Roths or convert to Roth. after-tax money in a 401k that you could roll over to a Roth could continue to grow income tax-free. So that's like a huge win. If you have employer stock in a 401k plan, that has a special tax treatment called NUA, net unrealized appreciation. And quite often that is a huge, huge tax benefit, which I've talked about on other shows. I won't talk about it tonight. But and other times, if the stock hasn't done so well, it may not be such a big benefit. And it also depends on how old you are. Lots of little intricacies that if we don't know about them, we may not be getting all the benefits that we could. So that's why I love questions like Dave just had. Thank you so much for calling in. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us or off air. And email is also available. We're in the last quarter of the show. If we run out of time and you have a longer question, you certainly can send questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. I don't bother you. I don't chase after you. I answer your question. That's all I do. I answer your question. And so no fear there. To me, it's, you know, questions that kind of help everyone. I'm all about education. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
It's that time of year again. Celebrate WDIY's 26th anniversary with our virtual party online Saturday, March 20th from 7 to 8 p.m. Hosted by John Dodds and featuring the Lehigh Valley's best musical performers, such as Alex Meixner and Rick Weaver.
So here's a help to the company.
Plus, plenty of special guests. For more information and virtual passes, WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, WDIY.org. You can stream live with us as well and check out the app, the WDIY app. I know there have been times where I've been in the car listening to a program and I'm sitting in my garage. I have to turn my car off. And so I quickly pull up my phone and I go to WDIY.org. Well, now we can go to a WDIY app. So James has been working on that, and we want to give him kudos for that as well. Some questions. Again, if you want to email, you can do that through yourfinancialchoices.com. And the phone number tonight, 610-758-8810. Other questions that folks have given me at the office where the clients have been asking, and I'll see if I can go through some of these more quickly. The IRA contribution limit. So individual retirement account, there's deductible IRAs. If you make too much money, you could do a non-deductible IRA, meaning you don't get a deduction for it, and you could later convert it. That's one of those ways you get basis in an IRA. But if you don't have any other IRAs, and it's the only IRA you have, you put $7,000 in, non-deductible, convert it to a Roth. Now you have $7,000 in a Roth. And the reason you might do something like that, non-deductible IRAs, your income is too high to do a Roth. But the IRS doesn't limit us on non-deductible IRAs. So for people who are really flush with cash and working, you can do a non-deductible IRA. You just would have basis in your IRAs then, and it does cause a little bit of a hiccup when you're doing that Form 8606 and later taking RMDs and things like that. So that calculation applies when you're doing a conversion. It also applies later when you're taking required minimum distributions. You have to continue to allocate a little bit of your after-tax basis in an IRA to the distribution, and that piece is not taxable, okay? Is there still the $10,000 deduction for the SALT tax, the SALT being the state and local taxes on Schedule A when you itemize deductions? Yes, it's still limited to $10,000. That has not gone away. But if they never change tax legislation again, it will revert in 2026 when the current tax laws sunset. Let's see what else. The last payment in January for my estimates, is that like 2021? Was that actually for 2020? Yes. So be careful with this. So a tip, don't forget about the January payments that you've made for estimated tax payments. Know what year to report them. We have had clients give us, we're cash basis taxpayers for 2020. If I have deductions, it's whatever I've paid in 2020. And people sometimes forget about the January 15th payment they've made for Fed or for state or for local. So the January 15, 2021 estimated tax payments you may have made do count for 2020. You have to kind of think of it in your head as the IRS giving us a last chance to apply some of that tax they expect that we owe. It gives us a chance to calculate what our 2020 income is if, for example, a big bonus comes in at the end of December or we sell some big stock at the end of December. It gives us a little bit of a chance to rectify if we've not paid in enough for 2020 or, for the tax year that we have until January 15th. Now, that would count toward the tax year of 2020 in my story. If someone does itemize and they do have enough to itemize and they might have that SALT deduction, the state and local tax, cap, you might be under $10,000. Maybe you're retired and you only have, a little bit of your state estimated tax payments that you might be making and some real estate taxes. Those together might not even be $10,000. But if you paid it in January 2015, that would not be counted for 2020 as a deduction. That's the difference, and that's why it's confusing. So the fourth quarter estimates count for the prior tax year, but as a deduction, the state estimated tax payment only will count for the year in which you paid it. It eventually catches up, but that's why sometimes we will have clients bunch those deductions to make sure that if we think they're going to itemize and they need that extra amount, we'll tell them to pay it in December. Hope that's clear. Can I do both an IRA and a Roth IRA of $7,000 each? No. You can't do both a $7,000 IRA and a $7,000 Roth. What you could do, though, is $7,000 of any combination to a Roth or an IRA. And we have done this with clients, especially those who might qualify for the retirement savers credit. Some of our lower income folks, maybe in that lower brackets, that are still good savers and they could qualify for a retirement savers credit if we lower their income a little bit. So we might do maybe $3,000 to a deductible IRA and do $4,000 to the Roth. If it lowers the income to increase the credit, you can do it that way. That's why the IRS also gives us until April 15th to decide how much we can put in a Roth or an IRA, because maybe we want to move it around a little bit. But the cap is $7,000 for the IRA and the Roth IRA. Those are the traditional kinds of IRAs and Roth IRAs. A designated Roth through a 401k has the normal 401k limitations, which are much, much higher. Hopefully that's clear. Another quick question. Are gifts taxable income? We get this actually quite often. Are gifts, someone gives me a $15,000 gift, wishful thinking, is it income taxable to me? No, because it's a gift and it's not income taxable. And the person giving it doesn't have to report anything either, as long as it's under the annual exclusion amount. If it's over the annual exclusion amount, they may have to file a gift tax return. It doesn't mean they have to pay gift tax on that at that time. The gift tax doesn't start applying until we use up our lifetime exclusion. And right now that's about $11.5 million. And I always just say about that because I can't keep track. It changes, 20,000, 100,000, whatever, here and there every year. So it's about 11.5, maybe 11.48. I don't remember which year. So I'll check that at some point and try to get that in my head. So no gifts are not taxable income to the recipient. We talked a little bit about the unemployment compensation. Someone asked, do I have to do anything? They already withheld the tax. Do I have to do anything with that? Do you need a form? Is there a form? I had unemployment compensation. They already withheld the tax. You don't need anything. No. Yes, we need something, because your tax really is not dependent on just that flat 10% that you can elect to have withheld. Not everybody has the 10% withheld on their unemployment compensation. Some people do, but it doesn't mean that's your tax. Your tax is based on all the other income on your tax return. You might have zero tax. You could have 15% tax or 22% tax. Who knows? We need the form, the 1099-G, from the unemployment. And if you did not receive it, then you can go on the state's website. If it's Pennsylvania, go on the Pennsylvania's unemployment compensation website. And I think they have steps there of how to download that. And I had printed that out for you, but I'm running close to time and I want to get through some of these other questions. So just know that you should be able to find a way to download that. All right, but we need to know how much that income is. So you heard me talk earlier about the stimulus package that's going through that is going to exclude, I believe, up to $10,200 of unemployment compensation from taxation for people who have already filed a tax return that reported unemployment compensation. If you had zero tax anyway, it won't matter. But if you were in a tax situation where you actually owed tax and you had included the entire amount of unemployment compensation, you've already filed your return, I am guessing you will probably have to file an amended return to exclude the portion, the $10,200, to exclude that and then recalculate your return, because in that case, if you already had owed tax, you will get some relief, and I would expect you would probably get a refund. If you have things like an earned income credit or some other credits associated with the income on your tax return, that could open up the door to maybe adjust some of that as well. Maybe it'll give you more credits on, you know, other pieces of your return. So it will be worthwhile looking at that. Social Security. How is Social Security taxed, along with how much can someone earn before it is taxed and at what percentage? That I could probably spend 15 minutes on or so, and maybe I'll do that, you know, another week, because I think it's a great, great question. Taxpayers receiving, let me give you just a little blurb first on that, if I can. Taxpayers receiving Social Security benefits may have to pay federal income tax on a portion of those benefits. Social Security benefits include monthly retirement, survivor, and disability benefits. They don't include supplemental security income payments, which aren't taxable. That's needs-based. That's not the normal Social Security. The portion of benefits that are taxable depends on taxpayers' income and filing status. To find out if their benefits are taxable, taxpayers should take one half of the Social Security money they collected during the year and add it to their other income. Other income includes pension, wages, interest, dividends, and capital gains. If they're single and the total comes to more than $25,000, then part of their Social Security benefits may be taxable. If they are married, filing joint, they should take half plus all that other income and half the spouse's Social Security and add that to all the other combined income. And if that is more than $32,000, then part of their Social Security may be taxable. Then there's more steps to that, which I won't get into right now, but there's phase outs, and then it could be up to 50% included in your income, or it could eventually be up to 85%. Not everyone has to include their Social Security income. If you're below threshold, you don't include it. If you're somewhere between these certain thresholds, you'll include part of it. And if you're way over the threshold when you add up all that income, then it would be no more than 85% includable. So it's includable in the income. And then you go on with your calculations. All right, we can go over that maybe more on a subsequent show, because I think it is worthwhile talking about it. One of the reasons it's very important, and especially with planning, is if you were going to do something like a IRA conversion to a Roth, you're putting extra income on your return, you want to make sure what impact that is to your Social Security. For people who are deferring their Social Security, waiting a little bit longer to take it, but they've retired, it is a great opportunity to do conversions, because you're not impacting the taxation of your Social Security because you're not taking it. But once you start collecting Social Security, it's much more difficult to start adding extra income to your tax return, because it's going to tax that Social Security that otherwise wouldn't have been taxable. It is a lot of you know, number crunching. It's a lot of fun. I think it's a lot of fun. Anyway, I hope you guys do too. There were some other complicated questions, which I can also touch base on another show. And that was, there was a situation where an adult child had their parents, you know, joint on the title with them for whatever reason. The child was buying the house themselves, paying for it themselves, had lived in it all these years, and is now selling the house and realized the parents are on the deed. What happens with the principal residence exclusion when the real estate agents want to try to report the proceeds to the parents when it was never their house? And there could be some remedies for that and things to do. We will talk about that at another show. Very exciting show tonight. I love questions. I love the listeners' questions. We will do that again. In fact, we might have to do it next week because I'm pretty sure I don't have a topic for next week, folks. So on the fly here, I am going to let you know. Let me see if I can find out what my topic is. James, be patient with me. Next week, I am going to do listeners' questions again because I don't have a topic, folks. So listeners' questions next week as well. Tax questions, any questions. Want to let you know. Thank you, James. Thank you, Lori C. Thank you, listeners. Great show. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.